Well, it's really quite a shame that they canceled the 2017 Major League Baseball season after the Washington Nationals came to Denver last week. Because if they didn't, the Rockies played really well in the two series that followed, and that would have been nice to have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little upset about it.
It's
but,
a bummer.
You know,
it's a bummer.
It's nice that they're playing out the string of these exhibition games.
Yeah.
And still having the good decency to play well for the fans.
These next 130-plus exhibition games. Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree. You know, it's awful. Yeah, but that is kind of a bummer because it would have been cool to see them playing well.
It would have been cool to see them, you know, in response to that series, go on the road to a couple division opponents and take 4 of 6
right.
to a couple places you don't really play that well.
Yeah.
You know, see some good starting pitching, to see some timely hitting, to see some of your, you know, players you've been counting on all season long get back into form. You know, it would have been nice to see that.
That could have been great. That could have been really great. Cool to see.
Yeah.
But, you know, just sometimes things don't shake out that way. Hey.
Well, that's the beauty of Rockies Twitter, because
yeah.
there could be a World Series parade going on in Denver, and Rockies Twitter would still be like, "Well, I don't know, what are they going to do when they get to Spear?"
Yeah, no.
You know?
Rockies Twitter, the Rockies fan base is comprised of like those of us who we consider the good part of Rockies Twitter, us and the Purple Row people, and our group, our band of merry followers. And then there is the part of Rockies fandom that is just Randy Quaid from Major League 2, that everybody is that person.
Yes.
You know, the Rockies will win a division title, and there will be those people sitting in the bleachers in left field going, "So what? They'll blow it in the playoffs." There will be those people.
Broncos won 3 Super Bowls.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep.
So anyway.
Well, hey, hi, everyone. Episode number 102 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great.
I'm
Got
not.
The... Okay.
Let
geez,
me tell you
Tyler.
Why.
Oh, yeah, please tell us.
Last Saturday, University of Denver men's lacrosse, of which I am the play-by-play voice, we're
name
traveling.
Dropper.
Well, not really, because nobody cares. and it wasn't a name. We're traveling home from
dropper.
Milwaukee. We drive through Chicago. We go to O'Hare International Airport. We're flying Spirit Airlines, which is already the worst thing on the planet.
It is the worst thing by far on the planet. Why would you do that?
We start. We're already delayed, right? So it's a monsoon there because Chicago is hell on earth. It's a monsoon. There's like flooding. It's ridiculous. So we get to the airport. We're already delayed. Go like find some food, sit and eat. Go to the gate. We're already like 45 minutes delayed, but you know, the plane shows up and we figure, all right, well, this is fine. Like one delay on Spirit Airlines is like winning the friggin' Powerball. So, you know, so we all get set to board. I'm in boarding group A for some reason, which is bizarre. So I'm standing there, I'm ready to go. And as people start boarding the plane, the gate agent comes on and goes, folks, we're going to need to temporarily halt our boarding process because of an odor on the plane.
Nice.
They never discover what the odor is. Then they have to replace the plane, which the guy says will take, quote, a few minutes. And like an hour and 45 minutes later, at like 1:15 in the morning, we finally leave godforsaken hellscape Chicago and fly home to Denver. So that was Saturday. Sunday, I started having like some tooth pain, like right above. And for those who don't know, which is probably most people, but Anthony knows, my two front teeth are they're not fake. Like I have my original two front teeth, but I have crowns over them because when I was in third grade playing on, you know, Denver area elementary school baseball fields, they're not manicured like, you know, the big league surfaces you might expect. So I was trying to field a ground ball during infield practice, as lo the young 8-year-old that I was, and took a grounder right in the face, and it knocked my two front teeth out, or broke them. So my two front teeth are fake. They're
you
crowns.
Should have asked for them for Christmas. You know, there's a song about that.
There is a whole song about that. I know. I really should have. So I started feeling like some pain. Sunday night, I'm like in agony. Can't sleep. I lay there, like I fall asleep for 3 seconds. I wake up because my mouth is hurting so bad. Go in the next day. I've never had a cavity as an adult. I've never had a dental problem since that whole thing when I was 8 years old. I've never had anything. I need two root canals on my front two teeth.
On like your two fake
on my two on my two quote unquote fake ones. The very front two. Two, not just one, which like one I could have been like, all right, fine, whatever. I need two at the end of this month, and like my they gave me, you know, medicine and it's helped a little bit. Like I'm not in just agonizing pain anymore, but like my face has been swollen all week. Not to the point where like if you looked at me, you wouldn't necessarily notice, I don't think. But like when I attempt to smile, I look like a prize fighter who just got the shit beat out of him. Like my lip looks all swollen, and I really just want to blow my friggin' brains out this week. It's been great.
Wow. So on that note, the Rockies are in first place, and
no,
it's
because
been
they
nice.
Canceled the season.
No, I'm sorry.
So all well, of this it comes on the heels of them canceling the season. I'm just so bummed.
Well, it's okay. We will keep this brief for you then today. We're not going to go hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, like, I know. We've been going long lately.
Yeah, so don't worry about that. That's a bummer. And I wish you nothing but the best. I want to not dance on your grave.
Jeez Louise, man. It's dark.
Yeah, well, it's dark here today. It's gray. It's a gray day in L.A.
It is a gray day in wherever the hell I am. Providence, Rhode Island, too.
Yeah, well, that's just normal, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. New England sucks, by the way.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm going to be going there tomorrow.
Nice. So, I know. I'm not going to see you, which I'm very excited about.
Thank God. We'll be in the same airport, but at different times, I'm assuming. We're going to get there like 3:30 in the afternoon tomorrow to Boston.
Oh, no. My flight is really like at 4:30.
So, are you serious?
I will almost certainly be there at the same time as you.
Oh, God damn it.
Oh, man. As if this week could get any worse.
Yeah. I'm flying JetBlue, so stay away from the JetBlue terminal.
Okay. I'll do my best.
Okay, good. So anyway.
So anyway.
Yours, mine, and our Colorado Rockies are 18-11 now, a full game and a half up on the second place Arizona Diamondbacks, who just coincidentally come into Coors Field for a 3-game set starting this weekend. But the Rockies, they are 11-5 on the road. They are 14-7 against the NL West. They have a 500 or better record against every other NL West opponent so far. Everyone's going to scream their run differential is still -1, but I don't care because the Rockies have put together one of the more interesting teams that we have seen in quite some time here in Denver. I mean, they
run
are,
differential right now for the Rockies is like butthurt emails. It's like that's like that thing.
Butthurt emails. Yes, exactly.
But their run differential.
They're 18-11, which is the second best 29 game start in franchise history. Only 1997 was better when they started 20-9. That was a really good team early in that season. They also started 18-11 in 2011 as well. They're in first place on May the 5th, I guess now that it is. It's May 5th. And it's pretty awesome to see. The starting rotation's been playing well. They're doing this really without John Gray, their ace. They're doing without any real major contributions from Tyler Anderson in that starting rotation as well. Doing without really any major contributions from Carlos Gonzalez and Trevor Story in the lineup. And yet here they are, 18-11, because their bullpen has been outstanding. They are 9-0 in one-run games. And, you know, they just won a series in San Diego for the first time since 2013.
Yeah, can you believe that?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, I can believe it because they seem to never play well there, but the Padres have also just been garbage, so it's really stupid. I mean, the Rockies have been bad, too, but I get it.
Well, Weiss just couldn't solve the Rubik's Cube that is Petco Park, I guess.
Well, this is the funny thing. So we're on MLB Whip Around last night, and former Rocky, Mark Sweeney, is one of our analysts, and he works for Fox Sports San Diego as well. He does some of their in-game analysts. He does some of their sideline reporting, some of their studio stuff. And so he worked with Bud Black for a long, long time. And his whole thing, so we had a big discussion last night, like a 2-3 minute discussion on the Rockies, and it was great. And only Coors was only kind of mentioned once. It was very, very interesting. So, FS1, Whip Around, weeknights, 11 Eastern. So 9 Mountain, watch it. Shill.
Name dropper.
Yeah, exactly. So he was talking about the relation that Bud Black can have with his team and what Bud Black does very well. We've seen Bud Black be a gregarious sort. He's been very fun with the media. The players seem to really like him a lot. He's like, what Bud Black is really good at is managing a bullpen. That is what his major strength is as a manager. He said Bud Black wasn't very good at dealing with offense or being creative with offense. But the good part is about being a Colorado Rockies manager is that you don't have to be creative with the offense, because the offense is going to be there regardless.
Your ballpark is creative with the offense.
Exactly. He said the best thing Bud Black does is manage a bullpen. And we've seen the results so far with them managing that bullpen. They are 12 for 12. Greg Holland's 12 for 12 in save opportunities. They had the most saves in all of baseball. They're in the top five in almost every offensive category, or offense category, every pitching category in terms of the bullpen in the National League. I mean, their the ERA is under four, which it was, you know, over five last year. Was the worst in the National League. They're not killing themselves with walks. They're one of the best strikeout to walk ratios in the league. And that's the big part of the team that was 9-0 in one run games this year. I mean, the last team to start 9-0 in one run games was the 04 Giants. The MLB record to start a season is the 1972 Mets, who went 11-0. Last year, the Rockies were 12-20 in one-run games. 12-20. They get 12 one-run wins by the time June 1st rolls around this year. That's the biggest difference. The bullpen is no longer a hindrance. The bullpen is now considered a strength. So if this rotation, who is full of first- and second-year guys, if they can't go more than five, six innings in an outing, they've got people back in the back end of that bullpen that can really get outs consistently. I know Ottavino had a rough go yesterday, but that has been the outlier so far. So that's the most amazing thing for me with the Rockies so far. And that's why I like seeing that confirmation from a guy like Mark Sweeney, who worked with Bud Black for almost the entire tenure that he was actually in San Diego. So he knows Bud Black very well and says he's such a great fit in Denver because of that reason. He's got, you know, he doesn't have to worry about the offense at all. He only has to worry about the pitching staff and especially the bullpen. And that's what a manager can control. And that's what Bud Black is very good at.
It also kind of makes me think, you know, what this team would have been like over the last few years with a manager like Bud Black. And I'm not saying that they would have been a first-place team, but I think it is showing that a manager can make a difference. And I think if this team right now was being piloted by Walt Weiss, I think they're a 13-16 team at best. You know, I don't think that you are going to see the bullpen management, especially that we've seen from Bud Black. And, you know, we talked about it last week, but Nate Kreckman, when they were getting just roasted in those last few games against the Nationals, Nate Kreckman, our good buddy from Altitude 950, pointed out that the takeaway from that was that Greg Holland and Adam Ottavino didn't pitch in those blowout games because Bud Black kind of knows the way to take an ass whipping, basically, which you're going to have to deal with at Coors Field. I don't think that we would be seeing anything even close to this if Walt Weiss was still the manager of this team. So it certainly shows that there is an effect that managers have on major league teams. And this team right now seems to be taking on the personality of Bud Black, too, where there's just a quiet confidence. And guys, Bud Black is like a poor man's Joe Maddon. You know, like he's very gregarious, he's effusive, he's very intelligent. And that's obviously a very high comparison to put on anybody. But when you have a manager who players know not only has your back and has your best interest in mind, but really feels like one of you, that goes a long, long way. And that's what this team seems to be thriving on right now. They've got an identity that grows by the day as a good team. It's not a fluky team. You don't win one-run games based on flukes. You can, but the Rockies have been winning one-run games because of timely hitting and because of good bullpen work. Yeah. And that's huge. That's massive for this team because that never happens when you're the Colorado Rockies. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, and that's the thing why people are, you know, looking at the Rockies, maybe a team that's going to hit some regression pretty soon. And I get it. Why? Because those are the main factors you can look at to see a regression coming is run differential. It's batting average on balls in play. It's swing and miss percentage and that kind of thing. And that's where there I can see a couple of reasons why people aren't super psyched on the Rockies right now. You look at Antonio Senzatella and Kyle Freeland, who put up fantastic numbers so far. Both ERAs under two, the two best ERAs through the first six starts of any career for a Rockies pitcher. Freeland number one, Senzatella number two. But they also rank number one and number two in the lowest swings and misses garnered by starting pitchers in the National League.
Yeah.
So Senzatella gets a swing and a miss just over 13.5% of the time, Freeland about the same number. They're 1-2. And then it goes Senzatella, Freeland, and then guys like Bartolo Colon, Jeremy Hellickson, Mike Leake, Kyle Hendricks. Not necessarily guys you think are world beaters, but
Kyle Hendricks is kind of surprising to be on that list.
he throws so softly. I mean,
yeah.
Jared Weaver gets more swings and misses than these kind of guys.
I guess Kyle Hendricks just makes it work, you know.
Right.
I mean, he's just a successful arm. Although this year he hasn't been great. He hasn't been what he was last year. But still.
No, but that's the difference. You can definitely see why, you know, you can see why people are a little bit skeptical of the Rockies so far, because, oh, well, you know, more balls in play equals more opportunities for bad things to happen. And we have all people will know that's the case, is us being Rockies fans. We know that's the case in Coors Field. So you want them to get more swings and misses. That's great. But you also know if they keep the ball on the ground, which Kyle Freeland has the second best ground ball rate of any pitcher in baseball right now. You keep the ball on the ground at a very high rate. Look, the guy's playing behind you in the infield. You've got Nolan Arenado, the best defensive third baseman in baseball. You got DJ LeMahieu, one of the best defensive second basemen in baseball. Trevor Story has had a lot of great defensive plays so far this year. He's really improved his defense. And then Mark Reynolds, Dean Desmond, whoever's at first, they've also played very well defensively as well. So, you know, if that's going to be your game, that's fine. You hope to get more swings and misses as the season wears on, but really this is their first, you know, 5 weeks in the big leagues. They're still trying to get their feet wet. I'm sure the stage is still pretty big for those two guys right now, but they sure have not seemed like it. And that's the great thing you see, because as we mentioned, it's all first and second year guys besides Tyler Chatwood and Herman Marquez. He had a great outing last time against Arizona. He's pitching tonight here on Friday, May 5th. So that's, you know, see if he can continue that as well. You know, once these guys get established at the big league level, I think that's the biggest thing going forward, because you've got to figure out how you can get your routine every day, how you can get guys out, when you face a team for a second, a third, a fourth time, how are you going to attack them? How are they going to attack you? What adjustments will you make? And that's why I'm really, really excited to see what these guys do, you know, for the next couple of months.
I think on one hand, there is definitely stuff to be concerned about with the low swing and miss rates. On the other hand, I also think, you know, as you pointed out, the fact that these are all such young guys really, at least in my mind, speaks to the fact that there's obviously going to be a learning curve, number one. But number two, they're working around the zone right now because you have to figure out what your best method of being effective is when you jump into any new level, and especially to the major leagues. So I think that there is still a whole lot of room for growth in that guys are going to learn. It's like breaking in a glove. You're going to learn what exactly you want in your margins of your strike zone, how your stuff is going to work at the big league level, where you can afford to bury a curveball, bury a slider, how those pitches will work against major league hitters, how your approach works against major league hitters. That's all still in the feeling out process for guys, especially like Freeland and Senzatello, have made just a handful of starts in the big leagues now. So there's room for both skepticism about why things are going so well despite those numbers, but also I think, as there is everywhere, there's always that boomerang effect, and where these guys are getting things figured out in that regard right now, I think eventually it'll swing back to they have really good, especially Freeland, at times in his career, has shown really good swing and miss stuff. And Freeland's kind of like Trevor Story in that when he has been at a level for a while, he gets better as he adjusts to that level. There's some struggle out of the gate. We really haven't seen a ton of struggle for Kyle Freeland out of the gate. So I think there's a lot of stuff to be encouraged about, too. But it's, you know, for these guys, the ultimate storyline right now is that the results have been good. So even when they've been allowing contact, it's been weak contact a lot of the time, which is exciting and it's encouraging. Will it hold out for 162 games? I don't know. Maybe. But I think while they're getting that figured out, we'll see. You know, Kyle Freeland has had really good strikeout stuff throughout his career. Antonio Senzatella is more of a contact guy, but he also had a ton of strikeouts a few years ago in high A with Modesto. So it can still be there. Guys go through this learning curve when they make it to the big leagues.
Yeah, and really, Kyle Freeland, his numbers in the minor leagues, he only struck out 6 batters per 9 innings. He had good strikeouts of early in his career, but in the later, the higher stages of the minors, he was a 5 to 6, 7 strikeout per 9 guy, which is kind of where he is right now. So the numbers really are kind of being very consistent with what we saw from him in the higher levels of the minor league. So he was getting a lot of ground balls. It's what he does. But he had a lot of good ERAs. Even right now, his ERA is 2.65. His FIP is still 3.74, which is still very, very good. You'll take that completely. But here's my biggest thing with the taking away from the Rockies right now, because you know, we wake up this morning, Ryan Freemeyer, good buddy, posted this morning that both 538 and Baseball Prospectus right now project the Rockies to make the playoffs. Now, projections on May 5th are ridiculous and stupid, and I literally unfollowed 538 after they said the Red Sox had like a 78% chance to make the playoffs
on April 11th. Yeah.
I can't do that. That makes me physically ill, like looking at all that. That's so stupid. So, but here is my thought process on it. The Rockies currently play in the National League, am I right? That is a fact. Look at the rest of the National League. You're going to get, to make the playoffs, you're going to get three division winners and then two wildcard teams. So you got five teams in the playoffs. You got the Washington Nationals right now. Seem like the class of the National League, maybe the class of Major League Baseball. Even without Adam Eaton, that team is still absolutely loaded in every possible way. The bullpen is not great. Could be their Achilles heel come October, but they're going to run away with that National League East. You look at the rest of the NL East. The Marlins, the Mets, the Phillies, the Braves. The Mets were supposed to be contenders this year. Everybody's hurt. The Mets are probably done. Nobody else in that division seems like they're going to make any serious run to the playoffs. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree.
So then, go to the NL Central. You got the Cubs. Cubs are loaded. Defending champs, 16-12. Not even playing that great right now. They're going to be fine. They're going to win that division, probably running away. They got the Brewers at one game over 500. The Reds at 500. The Cardinals one game under 500. And the Pirates. Do you expect the Brewers, the Reds, the Cardinals, or the Pirates to be anywhere near October come the end of the year?
Nope.
Right? I mean, they're not supposed to be really very any good. They got the NL West. You got the Rockies at 18-11. You got the D-backs, surprising this year, but they've been playing very, very well. They score a lot. The starting rotation's been great. D-backs 17-13. And the Dodgers 15-14. Padres 16 under 500. Giants bringing up the rear in last place. We assume the Dodgers will make their run as they always do. Dodgers will probably be up near the top of the NL West by the end of the year. But do you see the Giants making a really huge run as they're constructed right now? Bumgarner's out through the All-Star game.
Yeah.
The offense has been sputtering. I mean, who else is going to step up in that rotation? Samardzija's been hit around. Matt Moore's been hit around. You know, is Matt Cain really your best pitcher still in that rotation?
And they don't have a lot behind him either. They have Tyler Beattie at AAA right now, who's good, but, you know, he's not Madison Bumgarner good. I mean, missing him until July is massive.
And you talk run differential. The Giants had the worst run differential in the National League. But her
emails.
Second worst in all of baseball. The Royals are minus 38. So let's just do a strict process of elimination. The Nationals and the Cubs are going to be in the playoffs. Pause. Oh, you're done, Eddie? Oh, great. Thank you so much. All right, bye, Eddie.
I'm not kidding. I'm not cutting this out. That's staying in.
It's my palatial estate. You know, we're getting some work done here. Yeah,
adding the Tyler Mum Memorial Wing.
Adding on another balcony. Okay, process of elimination. So, Cubs and Nationals, we assume they're going to be in the playoffs. I'm going to assume the Dodgers are going to be in the playoffs as well. They're a very well-constructed team. So, that's three teams. You have two teams left to make the wild card, let's just say. Or whatever. Let's say the Dodgers win the NL West. Two teams left to make the wild card. Right now, who would you take?
Out of all
of those teams in the NL, do you see any of those teams really making a very strong run?
I do think that the National League West. I'll go out on this limb. I think the National League West will put three teams in the playoffs.
That is my point.
Yeah, I think the Rockies, the D-backs, and the Dodgers are all playoff caliber teams. I was watching MLB Central this morning on MLB Network because I'm in a hotel where they have cable, and that's amazing to me because I'm a millennial who doesn't have cable, and so I never get to watch MLB Network. But I'm watching it this morning, and Mark DeRosa had a good point, which was when you look at, they were talking about who in the next 5 years has the brightest future in the National League East. And the way he put it was, right now, the Nationals are the team that is built to run away with that division. There's no other roster in that division right now that's built to contend outside of the Mets, and the Mets are a disaster. So
contend now. I like the Phillies in a few years. I like the Braves in a couple years.
I think the Braves are going to be fantastic. The Phillies are going to be good because they've got so much money to spend. So down the road, 2018, 2019, 2020, those teams could be in the conversation. They're not in 2017. The Cubs are the class of the Central. There are So many weird – that division, I mean, even as recently as last year, I think you could have looked at three teams in that division and seen an argument for them being a playoff team.
The NL, Central?
The NL Central.
Well, 2 years ago they put in three teams.
Exactly. They put in three teams 2 years ago. Yeah. So it's strange to me how the Cardinals and Pirates have just disappeared, especially the Pirates, because the Pirates have not had a massive changeover on that roster. The lineup looks largely the same. I mean, obviously they've dealt with some extracurricular stuff. With suspensions and otherwise, but the rotation looks largely the same. They've had a lot of prospects graduate, get to the big leagues. You know, Tyler Glasnow is the latest one that you kind of expected the Pirates to be better than what they've been.
Jameson Taillon,
Gerrit Cole, obviously from a few years ago. Look at what Ivan Nova has done since he went to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So it's strange to me that the Pirates are not a team that is contending more. The Cardinals, the Cardinals are always going to be in that conversation to an extent. But right now, I mean, I don't think the Brewers are going to hold on. Look across baseball, you have two teams that are somewhat of a surprise. The Rockies, obviously. The D-backs, to me, are really not that big of a surprise. Because last year just seemed like it was a cacophony of errors for the D-backs. Yeah. Zach Greinke was awful at the beginning of the season. Shelby Miller fell apart. And I don't know why, but my heart really goes out to Shelby Miller over the last 2 years, because now the poor dude is headed for Tommy John surgery. Shelby Miller on the D-back side, and on the other side, Dansby Swanson and Touki Toussaint. And Touki Toussaint was not in that same deal, but is kind of the same mold in the D-backs Braves trades. Those guys are forever going to be linked to that Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa era, and through no fault of their own. Shelby Miller was a great pitcher. When the Diamondbacks acquired him, they gave up way too much to get him, but he was a great pitcher. And since he's gone to Arizona, his career has turned into such an abject dumpster fire. I feel awful for him. But when you look at that team, getting A.J. Pollock back, having Yasmani Tomas be a productive hitter, a productive member of the lineup, Chris Owings is good. You've got arguably the best first baseman on the planet in Paul Goldschmidt. That team, I think I was higher on the D-backs coming into this year just because, sort of like what we talked about with the Rockies bullpen, it seemed impossible that everything could go as badly in 2017 right. for the D-backs as it did in 2016. But the Rockies are a stunner to a lot of people. Those two teams are at the top of the division, so you're not even discussing the team that is the class of the division and has won it 4 straight times, and that's the Dodgers. So to me, that right now, I mean, it looks like 3/5 of this division is playoff caliber. At least two of those teams are going to make it.
Even if you don't believe in the Rockies right now, and it's May 5th, that's totally understandable. I absolutely 100% get that. I mean, who else is going to make the playoffs in the National League? 5 teams have to. You know, who else is going to be there at the end of the year? I'm not saying the Rockies should buy playoff tickets right now, but I am saying the NL is a little bit down this year. And I think if the Rockies, I said before the year, they can win 85 games this year. At this rate, with the way the NL is shaping up with all the injuries in the National League right now, 85 wins could easily get you an NL wild card.
Yeah.
Easily. That's all I'm going to say.
I think 82 wins this season can get you an NL wild card.
So you may not be psyched on them winning the division. They may not win 95 games, but you look at the rest of the league, I think there is very much an opportunity here for the Rockies to be a year ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, we were definitely hopeful that 2017 was going to be the opening of that window of contention. But I really think that the addition of Bud Black has kind of supercharged that, because he's drawing a lot out of this roster right now that I don't think we would have seen if we saw Walt Weiss back at the helm for another season this year. I don't know if that means that this team is right now playing over its heads, because I don't see it that way. Even with the run differential argument, they're still playing. This isn't a fluky record. The fact, it's rare that you're going to start a season 9-0 in one-run games, but it's not as if the Rockies have gone 9-0 in one-run games, and you look at those games, you think like, oh man, they really should have lost 5 of those at least. Like, they are playing the way a good baseball team plays and the way a good baseball team wins games. It's not something that feels like it's all just waiting to unravel. If anything, it feels more like this team is primed to get better when they finally get a full complement of players back on the roster that you're hoping they will eventually get at some point, although we don't know for guys like David Dahl now, who, you know, David Dahl back in spring training, we were told, oh, it's a day-to-day thing with his back. Now it seems like maybe David Dahl never had a back. I don't know what happened.
Well, it's a lot of days just put all together.
Yeah, it's just they're all strung together.
Yeah, without David Dahl. And then he's like, oh, it's a back injury. Well, it's a rib injury. Well, okay, wait, what? It's a rib injury?
Yeah.
Fractured his rib? Oh, that's something different than what it was initially. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Whenever, if ever, they get David Dahl back, I mean, that's only going to be good things for the Rockies. But right now, Ian Desmond is back, and he's played four games. He's hit a couple of bombs. You know, he's looked strong. He's made things happen, both offensively. Had a nice couple of plays on defense at first. He's played first base. He's played left field. You know, losing Tony Walters hurts. You know, concussion DL, but he hopefully won't be out for too long. He was hitting 350 when he went out. So,
yeah.
But then you call up Brian Hannigan, who somehow still exists and is still cashing checks, and he goes 3-for-5 with a bomb and two ribbies.
I honestly had no idea that Ryan Hannigan was in the organization. I feel like vaguely, I think maybe I saw that transaction over the offseason, but I really had no clue. They called him up, yeah. They added him to the 40-man and called him up, and I was like, wait, Ryan Hannigan is in the Rocky system? Since when?
Yep. So, and and like I said, this is all without major contributions from Carlos Gonzalez and Trevor Story. I mean, the Rockies are middle of the pack right now in runs. They're not going to be. I mean, they're never a team that's going to be middle of the pack in runs scored. That's not who they are. You know, Charlie's been playing well. DJ's starting to hit a little bit. You know, Mark Reynolds is still doing Mark Reynolds things. He's been amazing still. He's still just, even if he's not, you know, hitting home runs, he's still rapping out little base hits, you know,
Yeah. Taking
big swings and getting little floaters into shallow center field, getting to drop for a base. He had two of those yesterday. He's still hitting .307. I mean,
that is the amazing thing about Mark Reynolds. I mean, his evolution as a hitter over the last few years, where it's not just, you know, swing out off your ass and strike out 1,000 times, but also hit 40 home runs. I mean, the fact that he's turned himself into a legitimately good hitter is stunning and amazing.
He only has 25 strikeouts in 28 games. He's got a career best strikeout rate right now, which is amazing.
Pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing with Carlos Gonzalez. That's been a big topic on Rockies Twitter this week. You know, because I tweeted this out, I think, on Tuesday. But it's amazing that a veteran like Cargo, who's been in the league for as long as he has, can look so lost for such long stretches at the plate. And we know the overall product that is Carlos Gonzalez. We know he's going to end up hitting probably in the high 200s. He's going to get, you know, 25 to 30 bombs a year. So OPS will probably be in the mid 800s or better. That's just who he is. The last 2 years, Carlos Gonzalez has been healthy for two consecutive years for the first time in his career. And we've seen what he can do when he's healthy. He's a very much a major contributor to this team, but he has always been streaky. Now, everyone's saying, you know, he could maybe put Cargo on the DL. I know he left the game yesterday with a calf tightness. He said he's supposed to be okay. We'll see. Maybe he didn't have a calf like David Dahl didn't have a back, and we'll see. So the difference with Carlos Gonzalez is that, you know, he's the slump that he usually goes in like, you know, June, July, it's been at the start of the year. And so the numbers on the big Jumbotron, they look really bad. And you see him, you know, he's pressing a little bit. You know, he's not really getting the line drives that we're used to seeing Carlos Gonzalez. He's striking out a lot, which is, you know, normal for them. I think the last couple of days I saw him take better at bats. I thought he, you know, taking pitches better. He took a nice walk with runners on first and second after getting down in the count yesterday. Had a couple of long drives that, you know, got caught in the marine layer. But then, you know, everyone's saying, do you move Cargo? Do you put him on the DL? Do you drop him in the order? Do you bring up Raimel Tapia? You know, all these things. Carlos Gonzalez, you know what you're going to get from him. Yeah, the slump sucks, but it's a contract year for Cargo. You don't know how much that's weighing on him. You know, he got hit in the hand a couple weeks ago at Dodger Stadium. Don't know if that's still weighing on him a little bit. You know, that might still be hurting. But right now, the numbers aren't good. But you know Carlos Gonzalez. You know who he is. And so you got to ride it, because at some point, it basically only takes Carlos Gonzalez one hit to be back in it just like that. That's who he is. So I think the worry about Carlos Gonzalez is a little bit overblown. I think pitchers still treat Carlos Gonzalez as Carlos Gonzalez, the 40 home run hitter. So, you know, it's good for him to be behind Nolan Arenado in that lineup. And right now, I don't know who else you'd put there. And I know Bud Black likes the right-left thing that he has with Nolan and Cargo and then Desmond or Story or Mark Reynolds or whomever. So I think the worry about Carlos Gonzalez is a little bit overblown right now. If he's still hitting 200 on June 1st, yeah, I'm definitely going to be worried. But right now, I think I'm okay.
Yeah. It's definitely concerning because we usually don't see it go on this long with Cargo. This has been 5 straight weeks of nothing but struggle for him. And, somebody mentioned, I think it was Ryan Freemeyer the other day, mentioned that what's concerning about it is the bat speed is so down with him. And, yes. Yeah, I think maybe there is an argument to be made that he's feeling some type of ill effect from the pitch he took to the hand in Los Angeles. But at this stage, and I've been asked this a couple of times on radio over the last week or so, would the Rockies be well served to utilize the 10-day disabled list with Cargo? And I think yes. I mean, I think at this point there is certainly sufficient evidence that getting him out of the lineup may be more helpful than not, especially because it just, when you have so many guys who are swinging productive bats, you're keeping at least one of them out of the lineup in the hopes that continuing to trot Cargo out there, he's going to get it figured out. And when that isn't working, and it hasn't worked for 4.5 weeks, at what point do you decide, all right, well, we'll get Parr in the lineup, we'll get Reynolds in the lineup, we'll get Desmond in the lineup, and we'll give Cargo some time to get this figured out away from a game setting? Cargo's not going to the minor leagues. We got that question a couple of weeks ago.
That's not gonna, absolutely.
It's not going to happen for a variety of reasons. But first and foremost, it's transactionally basically impossible. You can't just send an established major league star to the minor leagues. He doesn't have minor league options. There's no real route for that. I think that's kind of a misnomer among fans that you can just kind of send guys down whenever you want to. But I do think that Cargo would benefit from some time away from a game situation. The thing is, they put Mike Dunn on the 10-day disabled list like 20 minutes ago and he was back. The 10-day disabled list goes by very quickly. I think that'd be a beneficial move for them right now.
I think that's one of the best things that's been implemented in the last couple of years by Major League Baseball is the 10-day DL. I think teams didn't realize how much they wanted the 10-day DL until it was there, and now they're using it like they have a shopping spree at Toys R Us and they're an 8-year-old after having a lot of pixie sticks. Like, it's a very much it's a great thing, especially if you can use it around a couple of off days where you're only a guy can be on the 10-day DL and only miss 6-7 games or something like that that he would normally be playing in that time. So I think the 10-day DL is a great tool because you don't seem like the guy is gone for that long. I know it's weird to say like 15 days versus 10 days. It seems to make a big difference so far. And I think a lot of people are really doing that. A lot of teams are doing that and using it to their advantage. A team like the Dodgers is going to use the 10-day DL more than anybody, I would imagine. So, yeah, I'm liking the 10-day DL. I don't think it'd be a bad thing for the Rockies to do that. But I also think, like I said, Cargo's always one swing away from being right back to the guy we've always known him to be.
And he had that swing. I think it was against the Padres a few weeks ago. He hit the home run to the second deck and, had the Cargo bat drop and everything. And you thought, oh, okay, Cargo's back. And it just did not play out that way afterwards. Well, I don't know. He's the one who worries me right now. Trevor Story, still is kind of mired in the same. It looked like Story was really coming out of it. He strung together hits in 7 straight games from April 18th through the 25th and bumped the average up to 176. It's since back down to 160. Trevor Story has one multi-hit game this season.
Yeesh.
One. Yikes.
It's
out of
great.
28 that he has played, his OPS is 662. So he continues to concern me a little bit as well.
He's also sat the last 2 games, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Whether that was just Bud Black giving him a blow for a couple of days, and he came into the game yesterday when Cargo left. He had one at bat. He did walk. But if that could be like a mental break for Trevor Story to get out of the lineup for a couple of days and then come back reinvigorated at Coors Field, we shall see if he's in the lineup tonight. Because I don't want Alexi Amarista starting shortstop to be a thing. Continually, even though he's done very well.
Yeah, he's done fine.
So that's great. But I'd rather not see that if I can help it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little worried about that. It's that is the stuff that is as concerning to me as, you know, there's been really there have not been a whole lot of reasons to be encouraged by some of the stuff we see from some of the young guys in the rotation. There's also reasons for concern among this lineup, and yet somehow they're doing enough to get the job done. Yeah. To the point that they have the second best record in the National League right now. They have a better record than the World Series champions at this point who come to Coors Field next week.
Oh, God, really? Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
God, the worst weekend in Denver is when the Cubs come to town.
Cubs fans,
it's been like that since I remember.
Chicago. It's ruined my life.
Like, since like 1993, it's been like that for Cubs fans. And now that they actually are good and they won a World Series, God, they're the most insufferable people in the damn world.
Yeah, it's we actually got an Ask PDP question in, which I just submitted on Twitter, or I invited people to submit their Ask PDP questions for today, and we got one. Quote, in your opinion, is there a fan base that has gone from likable to absolutely obnoxious as quickly as the Cubs after the World Series win? Well, that presumes that Cubs fans were ever likable, which
exactly.
Is, man, that is a jumping off point I can never reach.
It's the same as the Red Sox were the same way.
And the reply is the 2005 White Sox, which in zero way I would agree with.
I think the Red Sox must be easily a Chicago person.
Yeah, it's got to be. The Red Sox were easily the most obnoxious. Easily. The most obnoxious in any sport ever. The only fan base that got more obnoxious or arguably close to as obnoxious were Seattle Seahawks fans.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. Oh,
Kansas City
God,
Royals fans got shockingly annoying over the last
year. A little
year,
bit. But yeah, but now it's over.
But yeah, no, they've come back to earth. But I would not agree with the White Sox, and I would not agree the Cubs fans were ever likable. No. So from that standpoint, no. So that is a nightmare. And when the buffoons that all move from Illinois, because Illinois sucks, to Denver, when they all descend on Coors Field coming up next week, I will not be there for it. But I guess that pivots us pretty well to an Ask PDP topic, which is we just got two questions in about this. What would you give up? This is from our good buddy Matt Hansen. What would you give up for Yu Darvish? And one of our other followers, Boogie Rosenthal, said,
Boogie in a while.
Yeah, I know. He said, would you put Tapia in a deal for Yu Darvish? So I'm gonna address that one first. I would not with Raimel Tapia because I think that the plan is for him to be the guy who replaces Cargo. I think that's a reason why they haven't signed Cargo to an extension. I think they're also trying to save money to eventually offer Nolan an extension. But I think Tapia factors in very heavily to the future plans with the organization.
That's fine. I think he'd be one of the first guys that the Texas Rangers would ask for.
Right.
And I think to get a guy like Yu Darvish, who's going to be a free agent next year, I think the Rockies would be hard-pressed not to have to include Raimel Tapia in that deal.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the problem is, like, two of us who are, you know, kind of prospect nerds, you don't ever want to see prospects get traded. So when it's like – and what was kind of funny was somebody tweeted the other day and asked us, what would you give up for Jose Quintana? And a White Sox fan – posed he kind of found the thread and he started posing trade scenarios and basically said, I believe what he ended up coming up with is he wants Brendan Rodgers, Raimel Tapia, either John Gray or Jeff Hoffman, and like three other guys. And I was like, eh, dude, come on. Issue is what the White Sox were able to do over the offseason. And the way they really fleeced the Washington Nationals and the Boston Red Sox, that sets a really, really high bar for how much you're going to have to deal prospects to get major league talent. So if the Rockies are going to be buyers, they're going to have to give up a lot.
Yes. And that's the issue that you always come to at this time of year for the Rockies. Usually it's the other way. Like, oh, well, they're going to be, you know, they're going to be sellers. They're going to sell everybody off. And then they never end up doing that. But I think it's a very, very interesting year, and I think it's going to go down to the wire with a guy like Carlos Gonzalez too, because he's a free agent next year. They're, of course, he is instrumental to them getting to the playoffs this year, more than likely. So you don't want to sacrifice that if the team is contending, if they're looking good around the end of July. But you also don't want to see him walk at the end of the year for nothing, or I guess for picks or whatever at this point.
Right.
But if they're going to get somebody like a Jose Quintana, like a Yu Darvish at the trade deadline, and I'd be very, very hard pressed for them to try to get somebody like that. If they do, especially a guy like Quintana, they wouldn't ask for Rodgers because they have Tim Anderson. They just signed to a long-term deal, I would guess. But they don't really have a lot of outfield help. And so they're going to want Dahl. They're going to want Tapia. And I think that's where the conversation begins. Yu Darvish, since he's a free agent, he's just a rental.
Yeah.
The Rockies could have a little bit of leverage there. Because, you know, unless they talk to Yu Darvish and say that he wants to sign in Denver at the end of the year, which I would be very hard pressed that that's going to be the case. I don't think that would ever happen at all. I know Kaz Matsui had a nice time in Denver, but I don't think that Yu Darvish would have as fun of a time in Colorado. But
Coors.
Yeah. So I think that's fascinating because I think you'd have to put in Tapia if you're going to be trying to get a guy like Yu Darvish at the deadline. I don't know who the Rangers would ask for otherwise, to be perfectly honest. Because, I mean, they could use some starting pitching, sure. You know, so maybe somebody like, you know, Yency Almonte or Marquez or, you know, somebody along those lines who is going to be major league ready, who is playing well in the minor leagues. You can see somebody like that. But at the end of the day, it's going to be the outfield help that they're going to need because they traded away all their good outfield prospects to the Brewers, basically. So like the Lewis Brinson and, you know. So I don't know. They could be going in uncharted territory here come July. That's going to be the most fascinating thing.
Well, and what's so strange is the Rockies have an asset that a selling team would be very well served to have in Carlos Gonzalez. And that's what's so strange. If you're going to be buyers and you're going to be trying to pick up somebody to make a push toward the playoffs, you're going to be doing that from a team that is not contending. And you're not going to be able to sell somebody like Carlos Gonzalez to a non-contending team because Cargo's a rental as well. So that's kind of strange because, I mean, the whole situation right now with Cargo is weird. The fact that they haven't seemingly pushed very aggressively to deal him before this season, but they also haven't offered him an extension, and there seems to be just nothing but quiet on that front. It's weird because in order to deal him, you kind of have to be rooting for the team to fall apart so they're not in contention by the deadline. But
which
you obviously don't want
to root for.
Yeah, you obviously don't want that to happen. So in that scenario, if the Rockies are contending, if they do make the playoffs and they keep Cargo and then he walks as a free agent and they get a compensatory draft pick, sure, but you don't really cash him in for prospects or for other talent. So it's kind of a weird situation in that regard.
Yeah. So I'm sure there are a lot of Rockies fans who are oddly rooting against the Rockies in that regard this year, which is a very strange thing. But you know those people are out there. So
it's bizarre. It is bizarre. Let's dive into a couple other Ask PDPs, and then we'll get out of here. We're not going to go crazy long today. We got a question in from Rockies fan forever, which is, you know, it outlines it for you. And it is, quote, how much will we regret not giving Jordan Patterson a chance? I like Jordan Patterson. I think people are a little oversold on Jordan Patterson.
I completely agree.
I like Jordan Patterson. He's an extraordinarily friendly kid. He's a really bright guy. I like him. He's also a 207 hitter right now in Albuquerque. He's OPSing 809, which is encouraging because he's walking some and he's hitting for power. He's got 6 doubles, 2 triples, and 4 homers of his 17 hits this year. But Jordan Patterson, I think people are kind of acting like Jordan Patterson is the next Matt Holliday. He's not. He's a good prospect, but the Rockies have several outfield prospects that are markedly better than Jordan Patterson. They obviously are not in the market right now for a first baseman, where Jordan Patterson has spent most of his time this year. But Raimel Tapia is a better outfield prospect by far. Forrest Wall is even getting time in the outfield right now. You know, they have got, I don't, so in answer to that question, I don't think you're going to regret it at all. I don't think you're passing up on a future major league all-star.
Well,
by
and
not
also
giving Jordan Patterson
there's
a chance.
Still time to give him a chance too.
Right.
He's
yeah.
Just
I
a
mean,
triple
he's still
A.
Young.
He's,
yeah.
He's one injury away from being right. Up with the big club.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I just don't see it. I think people are a little overhyped on Jordan Patterson. Andrew Lacey comes in with this one. What kind of incriminating materials does Jordan Lyles have on the front office? Yeah, that's a good question.
That is a great question.
He's still on the major league roster, which
I think he and Christian Adames have the same incriminating photos.
Yeah, no, that's probably true.
So, yeah.
And they got bold and they got rid of Adames.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing with Jordan Lyles. Like, we know that whenever he comes in the game is either in hand one way or the other, you know? So it's...
up 10, down 10.
Yeah, if you're on a roster and you only pitch when you're up 10 or down 10, you probably don't need to be on that roster.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. I don't know. The issue is they don't have the ability to send Jordan Lyles to the minor leagues. That's why Carlos Estevez was the move.
Right.
But what is Jordan Lyles adding to your roster? That's the issue. I understand that you're worried about losing him, but if you lose him, it's kind of like
okay.
It's kind of like breaking up with somebody who you're not really that into. You are in the relationship because it's something to do, but if you end the relationship, is your life really going to be that much worse? Like, if they end this with Jordan Lyles, how much worse is it going to be? Like, they let Jordan Lyles walk.
There's like an old Dane Cook joke where he's like, I can't just break up with him. You know, my CDs are in his truck. You know? Like,
yeah. You know? No, that's it, basically.
That's kind of it, right?
Jordan Lyles has their CDs in his truck. That's pretty much it. And I feel bad for Jordan Lyles. I said this on some radio interview the other day. Jordan Lyles was a very, very good prospect coming out of the draft. And the Houston Astros screwed his development up.
Yes.
They promoted him to the major leagues at like 20 years old. He just never was handled the way he should have been handled.
A bad team. Like he was supposed to be like the savior. Really, really bad team.
Right, exactly. And that's not Jordan Lyles' fault. I feel very bad for Jordan Lyles. I also think if anybody needs a change of scenery, man, it's Jordan Lyles.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be like a Colin McHugh situation or a Will Harris situation where they just, you know, they leave Denver because the Rockies gave up on them and they're really good somewhere else. Like, no, it's like, okay, if Jordan Lyles goes somewhere else and starts dealing, okay, like, you needed to leave. It's like, well, like when Juan Nicasio
right.
needed to leave, I think. And then he went and became a decent reliever for the Pirates, the Dodgers, whomever. I think Jordan Lyles needs a change of scenery. I'm not going to be sad if he succeeds somewhere else.
There's a guy who's having that type of success right now in AAA in the Chicago Cubs organization. Eddie Butler is 1-0 with a 1.46 ERA in four starts for the AAA Iowa Cubs. Now, it seems like there's still a lot of the same problems there, but they're just not manifesting themselves in a lack of success. He's allowed 22 hits in 24 and two-thirds. He's only struck out 11 and he's walked 8. But opponents are hitting .239 against him. He's working out of jams. Guys like that, again, like, I don't have a problem with somebody like Eddie Butler going off and being successful. So Jordan Lyles seems like a good dude. I feel bad that somebody who has had so much of his career taken out of his own hands, that he gets put into a situation where, yeah, he's just this mop-up guy now, you know? And yes, you need an arm in the bullpen that's going to be able to handle those roles, but what is Jordan Lyles adding to this roster right now that the Rockies would not have without him?
Nothing.
Right.
Moving on. This is enough Jordan Lyles talk on this podcast. From everybody, Jeff Norwood at Jeff Norwood 43. Am I a jinx for the Rockies if they lose 2 to 4 games a year when I go, if those are the only games I go to? No, jinxes don't exist.
Right. Yeah, no, jinxes don't exist.
Moving on.
No hitter jinxes don't exist either. Yeah, moving on. Actually, there was like one more that I really wanted to get to that now I'm not finding. We did sort of address Jack Hayer, our good buddy, said, am I a dick for still being skeptical about the start? It just seems too good to be true, and I've been hurt before.
You're not a dick at all. You can absolutely be skeptical about the start. Yeah. There are reasons to be skeptical, but the point is to enjoy it. What did Jonah Carey say on the podcast last week about fandom, where you can always enjoy the highs but never get too low on the lows?
Right, exactly. And I think it's good advice, especially when you're a Rockies fan, because the highs are rare, so you gotta be able to take them when they come. We also, at AZ Axel, submitted this one. How do the Rockies keep their rotation from going stagnant, especially with so many rookies? I think we talked about that a little bit.
And getting John Gray back whenever that's going to happen, that's going to be great. So
yeah, yeah.
That'll help.
So, man, is that it? Is that it and that all? Did we just run through Ask PDP? We didn't even get any nonsensical Ask PDPs, which always makes
me. Yeah, come on, guys. Step up your game.
Don't ask us baseball questions. We don't care about baseball questions. Yeah. Dumb.
Come on.
All right. Well, then we might put a nice fancy bow on this one.
A nice fancy bow?
Yeah. Yeah, let's go fancy. Why not?
Seems we just like go one from Stephen Kennicott at TVGNS. Kind of answered already. Best way to help Story and Cargo break out of their respective slumps. Well, you know what they say about slump busters.
You need a live rooster.
Yeah.
Is it a live rooster? Live rooster.
Also got a good one from our buddy Travis Sarandos. Do you know of anybody who predicted the Rockies were going to win the World Series before the season started? Yeah, I believe Travis Sarandos wrote an article.
Yeah, I think he did, actually.
About saying that the Rockies are going to win the World Series before the season started. So good on you, Travis.
That was our opening day guest, Travis Sarandos, who you can find on the old tweet machine.
At Travis underscore MKE.
Yeah. I guess that's about it. Well, we need to get into some prospect talk. So next week we might have one of the old Rockies minor league radio guys on, because we have not done that yet this year. Ryan McMahon is like crushing anyone and everyone who throws him a baseball in the Double A Eastern League. So that's very exciting. Ramel Tapia has been really, really good with Triple A Albuquerque. Jeff Hoffman has had back-to-back good starts for Albuquerque as well.
You know what's great, that we haven't done a lot of prospect talk this year? It means the major league team.
Yeah, it means the major league team product has actually been pretty good. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Nice, right?
That's okay.
What a good change.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. All right. Buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. You can get your party deck against the world shirt. We still have your 20th and Blake shirts from last year. We got all kinds of good stuff at purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. You can find us on Twitter. Anthony is at Master Tones, and I am at Tyler Mon. And the podcast, of course, is at Purple Dino Cast. And you can email the show, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. I also want to put out this call again because I put together an episode last week and I thought, like, nah, it's getting a little stale. The first season of the podcast, we used to do the old up and in thing from Baseball Prospectus, where Kevin Goldstein and Ryan Parker used to do local bands that would be their intro music to each and every episode. And they credit the band, plug the band, whatever. So if you are in a band, if you know a band, if you have a band, if you are a friend of a band.
Yeah, that was fun.
And
yeah,
that was good. We had a lot of good submissions. They just dried up in that first season. But get in touch. Send us your stuff. Send us a downloadable file. We'll put you on the episode as our intro and our outro music. And we will credit you and hopefully give some traffic your way. So purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with us there, and we'll make it happen for you. And otherwise, I guess that's it.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. What's up?
Nothing. Just partying as usual.
Party rocking or just partying?
Yeah. Just partying.
Didn't one of those guys die?
I don't think so. I think socially maybe.
For some reason I thought one of the who the hell was that sang party rock? LMFAO.
LMFAO.
I thought
one
of them died. Maybe it was just terrible. Maybe it was just terrible music.
I don't think so. I think it's just bad.
Maybe that was it. Yeah. No, you know who died? The Dougie. Who did the Dougie? Something.
I know
boys.
The dance. I don't.
The
Gay Boys.
Cali Swag District. One of those guys got, son.
Got gotten.
Cali Swag District. They're from Inglewood. Inglewood. Up to no good.
Never up to any
good. Oh, God. Two of them died. Jesus. Monte Talbert, known in the group as M Bone, was shot on May 15, 2011. Kyron Childs, known in the group as J Air, which.
Jair.
Doesn't make any sense. He died on June 6, 2014. He suffered from sickle cell anemia. That's depressing.
Oh, yeah.
That's depressing. Well, anyway.